You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
September the 15th, 2020, two disasters hitting our nation. The wildfires, the most immediate, and continue to accelerate. 4.6 million acres and 87 large fires across 10 states continue to burn. At least three dozen killed in California, Oregon, and Washington. Hundreds, if not thousands, of homes and businesses destroyed already in those states. And dense smoke and fog enveloping around these areas. To the extent that the EPA says air quality in Oregon and the state of Washington now ranks the worst in the world. And this wildfire smoke is now being caught up in the jet stream and being pushed across the nation. Hazy, milky skies in parts of the Midwest due to that smoke, and also ending up in New York City and New England. It will cause additional problems for those who had difficulty breathing and, of course, those already dealing with trying to fight COVID. The other disaster, Hurricane Sally, slowly moving through the Gulf, target could be Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, somewhere in that region. But warnings are up from southeast Louisiana to the Florida Panhandle. They are expecting rainfall up to 30 inches with historic flooding. This may top again the new built levees in Louisiana, in New Orleans, I should point out. We'll see how they hold this time around. But they do expect life-threatening storm surge in parts of southeast Louisiana. That would be New Orleans as well, Mississippi, Alabama, and parts of the Florida Panhandle. President Trump today, a historic event. Be interesting to see how the mainstream media covers this. If they do, they've been trying to dismiss it. But today, the president signing along with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, the United Arab Emirates, and the Bahrain government, trilateral deals establishing relations, ending, hopefully, and ushering in peace while they end violence. More nations might be coming on board: Oman, Sudan, Morocco. This is major. And it's hoped the Palestinians will end up taking part in it and accept a two-state option, and that Israel will sign on with them. It's a start to try to end the violence in the Middle East. A start. University of Pittsburgh scientists say they have discovered antibodies that will neutralize a virus that causes COVID-19. They say we've been thinking outside the box about how it should be administered. It may be something you inhale, but they think it will actually be effective. It's already been highly effective in preventing and treating infections in mice and hamsters. And since the drug does not apparently bind to human cells, there should be few, if any, negative side effects in people. We will have to wait and see if that happens or not. Update out of Louisville, Kentucky. A substantial financial settlement issued to the Breonna Taylor's family. That's good. She was fatally shot by police in her apartment 6 months ago. Police entered on a no-knock search warrant and opened fire, shooting and killing her. She didn't know who's coming through the door at that point. They suddenly rush in. They don't know if they got police coming in the middle of the night or who it is, and she and her boyfriend started to shoot back or prepared to do so, and they were killed, or she was killed. He survived, but they were still trying to say that, well, he fired at us first. I don't know the actual facts and details, but maybe he did, because you come busting through the door, I don't know who you are. Joe Biden making his first trip to Florida as a general election candidate. Biden going into Florida admitting he's going to be courting Spanish-speaking voters. He said, I will talk about how I'm going to work like the devil to make sure I turn every Latino and Hispanic vote. He admits that his support with Hispanic voters has got to go higher. Meantime, Kid Rock joining Don Jr. at a rally in Detroit, encouraging folks to go out and vote for Trump. Kid Rock says, I'm going to do everything I can to get POTUS reelected. Kid Rock on the Trump team, in case you didn't know.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
So are you ready to get out from the COVID-19 scare? We might still need to be careful in some areas. I do encourage businesses to make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And, of course, if you open up and then a client or an employee or someone else surfaces with COVID-19, you need to reevaluate what's going on. I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. They can determine at a very reasonable cost what you need to do before you open. Once you are open, and as you move forward, it just makes good sense, doesn't it? Wellington Environmental, for 30 years, has been treating situations at hospitals, schools, daycare centers, private homes. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington Environmental. I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality and lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Short, my hair was long, caught somewhere between a boy and man. She was 17 and she was far from in between. It was summertime in northern Michigan.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
To get much tougher, we're getting weak and soft with a lot of the Democrat-run cities, and you're not seeing this. You take a look at the cities. The top 10 are Democrat-run. The top 25 are, I think, almost all Democrat-run. And their policies are horrible. They've taken respect away from police officers. They've degraded them.
The words of President Trump this morning on Fox and Friends in an audio interview talking about what's happening across the nation as police come under attack on a more consistent basis. And I don't mean just verbal attack, I mean ambushes. And of course, the most recent that caught hopefully a lot of attention, even those who might not think police officers are doing everything properly, there's no explaining, no justification for a guy walking up to a couple of officers just sitting in a patrol car at a metro system, kind of watching over passengers, make sure everybody's safe and protected, and just walking up and opening fire, shooting numerous times, hitting both officers. Before we wrap up this segment, I'm going to ask you to put yourself in the shoes of those officers and also some other officers and see how you would react. Now, I know many of you listening are in law enforcement, or you have friends, family, other relatives in law enforcement. So you know and appreciate directly. But too many, their only encounter and knowledge of a police officer is if they get stopped for a traffic ticket. And yes, among the minority communities, many have suspicions about police officers. The same exists with white. I was talking, pardon me, to a good friend last night, and he told me that he got stopped by an officer as he pulled out of a service station. What had happened is It was late at night. He pulled in. He was going to get some diesel for one of his tractors. He had a diesel can in the back of his SUV he was going to fill up. And as he pulled up, he noticed a police car parked off at the corner of the lot. No big deal. But then he realized, well, they don't have any diesel here. So he just put the can back in the car and drove away. The officer immediately pulled him over. He said, why'd you stop me? He said, well, you didn't signal coming out of the service station. Signal coming out of the service station? Where am I going to go? I was going to go on a one-way street. Those coming from the other side can't see this side of the street. You're going to give me a ticket? I mean, and I told him, why did you go off like that? Why would you do that? Why didn't you just have a conversation? And he admitted, yeah, I got a little hot-headed. And this is the white guy. I said, so you imagine now if you had been of color and started that kind of talk. You might have been slapped up against a car, cuffed, and put down the ground. And rightly so in many ways because of what you did in your reaction. But as a white guy, you probably got a little bit of a pass there. And that is an issue that certainly exists within minority communities dealing with police compared to others. And that's why we do need reform in the sense that police officers are going to treat everyone the same. Now, I don't know the officer. I don't know that he would have done what I suggested he might have done to someone of color. But I do know he was doing his job. He was thinking, possibly, a guy pulls in and he sees a police car on the lot and then he leaves. He doesn't go in the store, doesn't get any gas. So maybe he was thinking, I need to leave, but I'm, you know, maybe he got has a warrant out on him. Or maybe he planned to go in and cause a crime and then saw the officer and left. So I think it's good the officer pulled him over. On the pretext, he didn't signal going out of the service station. Kind of a weak pretext, but so be it. He was still looking for a reason to stop and talk to him. And my friend did not handle it well. And he admitted later, yeah, I should have done that. He said, I told the cop, I'm on your side. I'm on your side. Will you give me a ticket? I'm on your side. And I said, why would you do that? I'm telling everyone, I don't care what your color is, your age, your gender, your sexual preference. If you're stopped by a police officer, if you have an issue with how you were stopped and how it went down, deal with it in court with a lawyer with you, not on the street. It's not a good thing for you, nor officers nowadays, especially. And these attacks on these police officers, in fact, are getting basically passes, if not direct encouragement, from some on the left, specifically the progressive left. Not all Democrats feel this way. But if they're being silent, then they're adding to it. And to that extent, Congressman McCarthy, Kevin McCarthy, House Minority Leader, Republican of California, said, I have not heard one word from my fellow Californian, Senator Kamala Harris, who's running on the VP ticket for the Democrats, has not said one word about the shooting that took place at the transit station where two officers are in their car and a guy just walks up and opens fire. Haven't heard one word from her. And to that extent, he said, what they have done with the Democrats, encourage cop hate sometimes simply by their silence and the actions they're pushing, which they know would endanger communities, especially communities of color.
They're talking about defunding the police. They continue to talk about it throughout the community. They incite the ability for people to do this, that this is going to be okay. Why don't they rise up to condemn this? Why don't they rise up to go see those officers? Why don't they help look for the individual who did this to bring them justice? Remember, Kamala Harris was the Attorney General of California. She was the top cop of California. This is a person that she should have prosecuted. Why has she been silent on this?
Because it might cost her votes. That's my first guess. Larry, you're just too crass. You don't really know. No, I don't really know, and I might be considered crass, but that's my thought. I'm entitled to an opinion just like you are. In news and commentary a moment ago, I told you about how the city of Louisville was announcing a substantial financial settlement with Breonna Taylor's family. She was the one who was shot as police executed a no-knock search warrant, busting through the door, coming into her home. And they shot and killed her. She was apparently, from everything I've seen, not tied to any kind of crime She was an EMT. Doesn't mean by being an EMT you're certainly free of being criminal, nor a police officer in being free of being a criminal. But she didn't do anything wrong, but they shot her up and killed her. So I'm glad that the city of Louisville is stepping forward and paying an additional financial settlement. Her boyfriend, who was in the room, who's a legal gun owner, did fire a warning shot seconds before police broke down the door. He's also filed a lawsuit. He was initially charged with trying to kill a police officer. That got later dropped because he said they were just trying to silence me and cover up Brianna's murder. So this is exactly a case where, yeah, police officers should be held accountable. And you'll find everyone on the left jumping on that story, and that's rightly so. I'll jump on that story with them. But where are they on the shooting of the Metro Transit to two sheriff's deputies? This is the case where two officers are in their car and a gunman simply walks up and opens fire. Inside the car, behind the steering wheel, a 24-year-old deputy, a rookie. His partner, Claudia Apollinar, a 31-year-old woman, mother to a 6-year-old, is also in the vehicle. Both of them were rookies. Prior to her joining the police force, she had been the sheriff's deputy force. She had been a librarian. But she decided, I want to do something for my community, something more than helping them find books in here. Now, you don't put two rookies in the same vehicle normally if you can avoid it. But if you have to, you're going to put them in an area where they shouldn't be under any threat and no emergency situation. So they were parked at the transit, the Metro Transit system at Compton in the L.A. area, just kind of watching people come and go, watching for the safety of transit passengers. Maybe the biggest thing they might encounter is somebody exposing themselves on the train. But a guy walks up and opens fire on them. I want you to listen to the audio call of her calling for help, because she was able to she was shot in the jaw, actually, so her voice is already slurred, and she's injured. She also shot numerous times in the torso. Her fellow officer taking a shot to the head, can't tell if it's a graze or deeper wound. She's getting him out of the vehicle and getting them behind a pillar of a column on a building in case the shooter came back. They had some protection. And also even applying a tourniquet to help her partner while calling in. Now, you're going to hear this call. I'm going to tell you now, it's going to be difficult to understand because of what she's saying and the responses. I normally would not play any audio that you can't effectively hear. Even on television, if we played it, I said, I want the words displayed across the screen to help the audience understand the wording. I can't do that because it's only audio via our service here. But I want you to listen to it. Then I'm going to tell you what they said, and you're going to hear it again. But here's how it was coming in to the police dispatcher as she called. Now, let me identify very quickly for them so you understand who's who. On this call, she is calling a 998, which is a signal for a police officer down. She's calling Compton PAX, P-A-X. That's the police department. Her number is 602 Frank. So that's how the dispatch is referring back to her. Here we go.
Larry, 602 Frank, you're traffic? 602 Frank only, your traffic? Six foot two, Frank. I can't copy you. GSP unit 602 Frank is advising in 998 Compton Pass. You have a unit to respond in
311.
10-4, copy 998, deputy shot.
All right, now we're not going to have time to play it a second time for you in this segment. So we're going to play it again in the next segment, but now you've heard it, and you can hear it is difficult to understand her. But keep in mind, this 31-year-old woman, a mother of six, who signed on to be a police officer, a sheriff's deputy in L.A., sworn in 14 months ago, is also with her rookie partner, doing nothing when suddenly they were ambushed by guys simply walked up and opened fire. And many would say, well, the noise and the violence in the community, I know Cuomo mentioned that last night, Chris Cuomo on CNN, you can't possibly jump to conclusion and say the motive for this is tied to anti-cop violence and all the violence happening in the streets. You want to be that naive? You want to be so naive to think that with all these shouts of kill the cops, we don't effing care if they die? You want to believe that that has nothing to do with this kind of attack and others that are taking place, including one in St. Louis where an officer, a black officer, gunned down as he responded to a 911 call? I'm going to ask you to put yourself in the shoes of the officer that's caught in this incident and also another incident in the next segment. So we'll take a break. When we come back, I'll set up quickly these so you can hear the audio again and tell you what you should expect to hear as we go through it one more time. And put yourself in the shoes of that officer. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So once again, let's set the stage. This is the shooting that took place at two sheriff's deputies at the metro station in Compton in the L.A. area. You're going to hear the audio again. And again, 998 is a call for officer involved in shooting officer down. The officer is calling, the female officer, calling Compton PAX, which is the police dispatcher. Her ID is 602 Frank, so you hear the dispatcher refer to that. The officer will repeat 998, 998. And again, it's very hard to hear. 602 Frank only, your traffic. That other was another officer reporting 998 because he heard the officer where the dispatcher couldn't. And again, the officer said, Compton PAX, deputy's down. Compton PAX, 998. 602 Frank, I can't copy you. Officer, 998. Now imagine you're in this situation. You're trying to get the word out. You're the one injured. You're trying to take care of your partner. You don't know if you're going to come under attack again. Other officers are hearing, and they begin to help out. Listen.
Frank, your traffic. Frank, I can't talk to you. GSP unit 602 Frank is advising a 998 Compton Pass. You have a unit to respond in 3 left.
The deputy shot that was calling in was shot in the jaw. That's why she was having trouble making herself understood. The woman had been a librarian and decided to become a sheriff's deputy. She and her rookie officer shot, rushed to the hospital in critical condition. Now, how would you have handled it? You're in that situation. You've been ambushed. Could you have been that strong and that resolved and reserved? She helped get her partner out, get him behind a column, apply a tourniquet, taking care of him, and radioing in for help the best she can. How would you have done that? Would you have done that as well and effective? We all like to think we would, but until you're there, you don't know, do you? Now put yourself in the shoes of the officers at the emergency room, the hospital, where both officers were taken that night and being treated for critical injuries. They were not sure they were going to make it. And you got protesters gathering outside. And yes, I'm going to tell you, some of them had BLM caps. I don't know if they're members of BLM, but they had them. And they were standing there and shouting at the officers at the emergency entrance, "We hope they effing die. Die. Die, you pigs. Die." This is, how would you handle that? You're a police officer. I don't care your color. You're the officer. You're in the shoes of the police officer standing there to make sure they don't come in and interfere any additional ways with the emergency room. Some actually got inside the hospital. They had to be taken out. How would you handle it? What would you want to do? You can't do what you want to do. That's where you cross the line. That's where the training supposedly keeps officers from doing wrong, where they stand there and they take it. Unless they're physically attacked, they just have to take it. You've got colleagues in the emergency room behind you who might be dying, and you got people in front of you yelling, "I hope they die." How would you handle that? Even the best trained police officers do have a breaking point. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, a writer for the Federalist says the left is setting the stage for a coup if Trump wins. He's going to tell us what's in the plan right now and what actions they will be taking if Biden loses and Trump wins. Next segment.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
We welcome back John Davidson, the poli science editor for the Federalist. And John, as always, glad to have you on board, sir.
Thanks for having me.
You wrote a piece the other day, and we tried to book it, but so many other things came up for both of us, where it's titled, "The Left is Setting the Stage for a Coup if Trump Wins." And you're suggesting that there's already efforts underway to overturn the election if Trump wins. And, of course, Hillary's already said that Biden should not concede that night, regardless of what the numbers show. But let's get into your article as to how this would be going down as you present it.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I focus on the article is a series of war games that was held by this newly formed group called the Transition Integrity Project. And the results of this exercise were interesting. The team that played the Trump campaign engaged in all sorts of ridiculous, outlandish behavior that would never actually happen in real life. And the Biden campaign refused to concede. And these are not just nobodies who were doing this exercise. The person who was playing Biden in this war game was John Podesta, who was an advisor to the Clinton and Obama administrations and the campaign chairman of Hillary Clinton's 2016 campaign. So there's active talk among high-ranking influential Democrats about how to delay, litigate, ballot harvest and, you know, stretch out the election night so that they get the result that they're looking for. And I think that we should take them at their word when they talk about not accepting the results of a Trump win.
Well, and of course, Hillary's already said, "I don't care what the numbers show, don't concede that night." She was the very same one, obviously, when she was running against Trump and asked in two different debates, "Will you accept the will of the people?" And she said yes. And when Trump said, "Well, no, I need to see the results," and she went ballistic, basically, "You can't do that. That's not democratic. You're supposed to accept the will of the people." And she has resisted. Yeah, she's resisted ever since that night. Go ahead.
Well, you have other people sounding the same talking points now. You just yesterday had Shadi Hamid over at The Atlantic publish an article saying it would be better for Republicans if Biden wins, because if Biden loses, we're going to have more of these riots and unrest all over the country. Kind of a heckler's veto argument. It's a nice country that you got there. It'd be a shame if something happened to it. And you see this elsewhere among left-wing activists basically threatening to ratchet up the riots and the looting and the arson and the civil unrest if Trump wins, which is basically political blackmail. And that's what I argue in the piece. This is the left is undertaking political blackmail of the entire country, saying, Biden had better win the election, because if he doesn't, we're going to take to the streets. We're not going to accept the results unless our guy wins.
That's
not democracy.
No, it's not. And I've had that discussion with some folks. They said, well, do you think if Biden wins, things would get better? I said, no. And they said, oh, you expect the conservatives to go ballistic? And I said, well, that might happen to some extent. But what my bigger concern and bigger fear is that if Biden were to win, then it gives an endorsement, an encouragement for the progressive left that, hey, we now have a mandate to carry out what we've been doing. We've got blessings now. We're in charge, and they will run faster and harder with more demonstrations.
That's right.
You agree?
That's right. Yeah, I do agree. I think any time that you give aid and comfort to these radical left-wingers, whether it's tacitly endorsing their violent protests or turning the other, looking the other way when they besiege businesses and courthouses and attack police, you embolden them. And that's what we saw in Portland. People said, well, if Trump just recalls the Department of Homeland Security officers that he deployed to protect the federal courthouse in Portland, then all these riots and this unrest would disappear overnight. Well, exactly the opposite happened. He told the federal officers to stand down, and they had an agreement that the Portland, the Oregon State Police would step in, and the riots just continued. They just continued and got worse. And
the same thing in Seattle. Same thing in Seattle when the mayor said, oh, we'll have a summer of love and let them occupy Chaz Chop until they went to her front door.
Yeah, exactly. So when you give in to the mob takes that as a sign of weakness and a sign of their own ascendancy, and they respond accordingly. And I think that's exactly what we should expect if Biden wins. And by the way, I should say, these fears that like conservatives and people on the right are going to react like these radical left wing people who are protesting in the streets is crazy. That's not what conservatives do. They just don't do that. But that is what people on the left do.
Yeah.
They do mob up. They do accost people at restaurants. We've seen that all over the country. They do accost people in the streets. They do try to take and occupy spaces. Conservatives and Trump supporters don't do that. If Trump loses, Trump supporters will be heartbroken and disappointed and fearful for the future of their country. But they will, by and large, accept the result.
And that's a key, by and large, because there will be some radical fringe. We can expect that,
sure.
Clearly. You're listening to John Daniel Davidson, an editor, political editor for The Federalist, and a piece he wrote the other day. And in this piece you wrote, you pointed back to what Biden had said when he boasted back in June, the military, quote, will escort Trump from the White House with great dispatch. In other words, suggesting that Trump won't give up the office. We'll come in and we will remove him with the military.
Yeah, there's been this really crazy, totally irresponsible rhetoric coming not just from Democrats and the left, but actually from the Biden campaign. On more than one occasion, Biden said that himself, and then later his campaign reiterated that, this sort of fantasy world where they get the military to drag President Trump out of the White House. This is not normal political rhetoric. This is not normal presidential campaign rhetoric. This is obviously sort of fantasizing among left-wing ideologues who never accepted the results of the 2016 election. They never accepted the results. They've been litigating since the beginning. They've been trying to paint Trump as an illegitimate president since the beginning, and they would like nothing more than to send in the military and drag Trump out of the White House the way it should have been done back in 2016. This is just an extension of really of what they've been thinking for the past 3 years.
And they're getting support from mainstream media. You referred to the New York Times where Ben Smith was giving his account of the simulation you were describing and saying that in that scenario, California, Oregon, and Washington threatened to secede from the U.S. if Trump took office. The House would name Biden president. The Senate and White House stuck with Trump. At that point in the scenario, the nation would stop looking to the media for cues and wait for the military to take action.
Yeah, I know. This is kind of, this is crazy. It's crazy to talk this way, and it's totally irresponsible, especially at a time when we do have unrest in our cities. We do have a deeply politically polarized environment. We are dealing with pandemic and economic strain right now. This is not the way that responsible, serious people should be talking about an election. You know, we're talking about the potential disruption of a peaceful transfer of power, or the peaceful, you know, offing of an election. And one of the things I talk about in the piece is that the Democrats, whether they realize it or not, are in the role of the slave-holding secessionist South before the election of 1860.
Yeah, I was getting to that. Go ahead. Go ahead and tell them exactly what they've done. Go ahead.
Well, what the South did before the 1860 election is they basically came out and said, if Abraham Lincoln wins the presidency, we're going to secede. So vote for whoever you want to vote for, but if the Republican wins, we're going to break up the country. It was political blackmail of the first order. It was basically a hostage taking of the election, saying if our guy loses and your guy wins, we will end the Republic. And I don't know if Democrats quite realize that that is the direction that their rhetoric is leaning now. More and more, they're starting to sound like Southern secessionists around the time of the Civil War.
The irony in that is just, it's unbelievable.
Well, they were Democrats back then.
They were what we call down in Texas Dixie Democrats, Southern Democrats, and of course they were more akin to the left of today than Republican. But you're absolutely right. They're responsible for the KKK, and of course you've had senators Strom Thurmond, Helms, and others up serving in the U.S. Senate as racists for years. Well, listen, I thought it was a very fascinating article because it's not. The fact that they're doing their game plan behind the scenes, as you said, in the last 30 seconds, what do you think they're going to do? Will they actually carry some of this out or fold the tent and just go away?
I think that they're going to follow Hillary Clinton's advice, and Joe Biden will not concede on election night, no matter what the numbers say. And they are going to buy themselves time to litigate the results, to harvest absentee ballots, and to get the results that they need in key states for Biden to contest the election and to claim victory. I think that's what's going to happen.
All right. Well, we do need to be prepared for that, and legal warriors are being prepared on all sides. I have understood that. I always appreciate you giving us some of your time, sir.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
You bet. John Daniel Davidson, political editor for The Federalist. His titled article, "The Left is Setting the Stage for a Coup if Trump Wins." Speaking of Trump, I do want to give a little bit more time to this historic peace accords being signed today involving Israel, the United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain. And yes, President Trump, which the left hates to have to admit, and doing everything they can to already undermine it. Coming up in our next segment.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Got a black magic woman. Got a black magic woman.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
It is a done deal. President Trump hosting a peace signing agreement ceremony with Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, and Israel. It was announced last month that the UAE deal was done. Then the Bahrain deal announced last Friday. And today they signed off. And, of course, there's hope that you'll end up seeing additional Middle East countries join in for what they're calling the Abraham Accords, bringing peace throughout the Middle East. That maybe Omar, Sudan, Morocco, and others will step forward and maybe find a way for the Palestinians who really want peace to accept it and find a way. But of course, even when it was announced it was going to happen last week, the left started looking for a way. How do we dismiss this? How do we throw shadow on it and make it go away and just ignore it? Perfect example is Nancy Pelosi appearing with Wolf Blitzer last week. Just listen.
How much credit do you give the President of the United States for these peace agreements?
Well, hopefully they won't. Hopefully they will be beneficial to the region. We've been waiting for a very long time for the president's proposal for an Israeli-Palestinian peace agreement that honored the two-state solution. It was coming in 2 weeks. It was coming in 2 months. It was coming in 6 months. It still hasn't come in any way that has brought peace. So. Good for him for having a distraction on a day when the numbers of people who are affected and the numbers of people who are dying from this virus only increase.
Good God. I mean, you know, come on. Carter was not a great president, in my opinion, but I certainly gave him accolades for when he struggled to find one Middle East peace agreement involving Egypt. And if Obama had gotten such a deal like this, you know, I don't care if we were in the midst of a COVID pandemic, if he were president then, I wouldn't be saying he's doing this to distract from it. It's constantly politicizing and not accepting anything of value. Oh, she'll mouth the words, well, it's good if it happens and it's real and holds. We all hope it holds, obviously. It's just a document signing. But it's what it wasn't. But I'll give you a word in response from woman by the name of Dr. Quanta Ahmed, senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum, an attending critical care physician at New York University. She wrote a column published today about this, titled, "As a Muslim, I thank President Trump for brokering Israel-UAE Bahrain agreements and expect more to come." She went on to say, "Make no mistake, there are historic developments now that bring the number of Arab nations recognizing Israel to 4, following Egypt in 79, which would have been Carter, and Jordan in 94. The fact that President Trump and his senior advisor and son-in-law, Jared Kushner, were able to broker the new agreements is a testament to both their vision and effectiveness. She said, "As a Muslim who understands that nothing in my faith requires me to oppose Israel and the Jewish people, I'm going to be honored to attend that White House ceremony." So apparently she was there today. It took place in the Rose Garden, something like the South Lawn, I should say. Some 700 guests in attendance. She adds in her piece that Palestinian leaders who continue to reject peace talks with Israel and refuse to deal with the Trump administration are making a big mistake as they find themselves increasingly isolated. Again, this is a Muslim doctor who says this is a good deal. She said, "We can only hope that in time, they or a new generation of Palestinian leaders will come to the realization that it's in the best interest of their own people to make a just peace with Israel based on compromises by both sides." And she said, "Fortunately, President Trump continues to keep the door open for the Palestinians." She said, "President Trump paved the way for the Palestinians to reach a just settlement when he announced an Israeli-Palestinian peace plan at the White House in January, where I was also attending. Netanyahu immediately agreed to support the Trump plan and called on Palestinian leaders to meet him at the negotiating table, but Palestinians instantly rejected the plan." And this Muslim woman adds this, "Regardless of political or religious affiliations, all Americans should be grateful for the success President Trump has achieved so far on the path to peace between Israel and its Muslim neighbors." And I would point this out, aside from her article and her comments, for all of those who consider that Trump is anti-Muslim, obviously not. And if you recall the travel bans that were put in place, yes, it did affect those of the Islam, but they were more Islamist, which is not the same as what most Muslims practice. And they were coming from nations that were practicing terror and training terrorists. But these other nations, we've had an open door, and Trump looking to find another way to bring them all together. And Dr. Quanta Ahmed, a Muslim, says, "I thank President Trump for brokering these agreements and expect more to come." mainstream media sign on to that, or just kind of look for another way? How do we avoid it or go along with Nancy Pelosi saying it's another distraction? Again, as always, I appreciate you listening. Please let your friends and neighbors know about the program. If you've missed it, any part of it, go to Larry Connors USA Facebook for the podcast. Book it.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.